start, it's a full, not a full, but a half day. We have 12 presentations to go, and I hope we're going to do as well as we did yesterday. I have to announce, and I hope you already turned on the TVs, was in CNN and several channels. When I was driving here, I saw the smoke coming out of the hotel. Therefore, we do have a president that was elected for the Biopsy Society. It was a very difficult election, and gives me a great deal of pleasure to introduce to you the very first president-elect of the society, Maria Antonia Serra Neal. Apparently, Juan Carlos played a very important role. Juan Carlos the King. And also Rafa Nadal also was a very important vote, apparently. Yeah. There was, yeah. And Messi. Oh, no, no. Messi, no, no, no. Tony is going to tell you after all the presentations where the next meeting is going to be in 2 years. I'd like to invite all of you to join us, and it's your society, it's not mine, in Valladolid, Spain in 2 years for the second edition of this wonderful time we're having here. And I'm sure that in Spain it's going to be even more pleasant than has been here. It's just amazing the way the Tony and Gonzalo treat us there, and I think we're going to enjoy it very much. Tony.
Thank you very much. It's for me a real pleasure being here. What I like most is the democracy of the society. These elections are perfect. And let's start the session of the morning with Cristina Martins coming from Sao Paulo, presenting the case unusual presentation of intraocular tumors in adults.
Good morning. First of all, I want to say that I'm very happy and very honored to be here. I consider Montreal the city that has my second family. That's Dr. Bournier family. And actually, he doesn't like I say that, but I consider him like a father. I know he is not older enough to be my father, but I would say I consider him like my old brother. Better? Okay. And I'm really grateful to Dr. Bournier because he supports me for all my career. I had the opportunity to meet him the first time when I was still a medical student, and now I'm not saying how many years after I'm here with him in this wonderful meeting. Thank you very much, Miguel. Well, here is just to let you know I was here as a visiting professor in 1995-96, then 15 years ago. And it was, I had so many interesting cases during these past 15 years. Then I decided to select two that I think is, at least they are not so difficult to make the diagnosis, but they are unexpected diagnosed cases, then I want to share with you. The first case is, it was present at UNIFESP in November of 2001, and it was a 72-year-old male from São Paulo that complained of progressive loss of vision in the right eye for the last 2 months. He used to be a smoker for 30 years and had a pulmonary emphysema. His visual acuity was in the right eye hand motion and 20/25 in the left eye. In the microscopy, we could see a mass in the iris, that we're going to see in a minute, and he had cataract in both eyes. The IOP, and it was normal, and the fundoscopy of the right eye was impossible, and in the left was normal. A systemic workup was performed and it was negative. The ultrasound of the posterior segment was normal too. Here we can see the mass that we can observe here, a mass in the iris. And at that time, the patient refused treatment, even had been told that could be a malignus in his eye. Now he disappeared, and here we can see the ultrasound, the posterior segment is normal. And then, about 3 months after, we returned, complained of pain in this right eye. The visual acuity dropped to no light perception, and in the biomicroscopy, we saw an increasing of size in the mass and a choroidal pupil. And then at that time, he had total cataract, and the IOP in this eye was increased to 38 millimeters of HG. And here we can see the evolution. Really, in 3 months, this mass grew and displaced the pupil. Here, at that time, ultrasound biomicroscopy was performed, and you can see a mass that comes from the ciliary body invading the iris, and we can see that solid areas with lots of cysts, and this tumor like fulfilled the anterior chamber and occluded the angle. And here in the other side, the side of the iris was normal. Here we have other views showing the cysts, the occlusion of the angle. And here we had the differential diagnosis for this man. The first one was a malignant melanoma from the ciliary body and iris, or even a ciliary body adenoma or adenocarcinoma, or even with a negative systemic workout, metastasis was considered also. This is the specimen. Here, PO section. We can see that really the tumor comes from the ciliary body here and invaded the anterior iris and the anterior chamber right here. And this is the histopathologic study. Then we can see really this tumor came from the ciliary body and invaded the iris. In this low magnification, we see solid areas, and these other areas that correspond to cysts, that cysts we saw, that's filled of hyaluronic acid. And here another view. We can see here even is an invasion of the iris and the sclera is very thin at this area. And when you see in details, you see that this tumor is composed of a network of cords and sheets of these neuroepithelial cells that in some places they form the structures that resemble a rosette. Based on these finds, we made the diagnosis of a medulloepithelioma that mimics a ciliary body melanoma in an adult. Medulloepithelioma is a rare primary embryonic tumor, probably originated from the primitive medullary epithelium, that is the precursor of the non-pigmented epithelium of the ciliary body. It's very common just in the first decade. It's very rare in adults. Normally is unilateral and sporadic, and rarely is metastatic. We have two types of medulloepithelioma. One we call teratoid, when you can find other elements like brain tissue or cartilage, and a non-teratoid, that's our case, that normally is a that had well-differentiated cells from the non-pigmented epithelium. And malignant evidence can appear. Oops. I did that. I'm sorry. Well, malignant evidence we can define when we find poor indifferentiated areas of the cell or high mitotic activity or nuclear pleomorphism. And actually, We consider evidence of malignance when you have invasion of the other ocular structures or extraocular extension of this tumor. Normally, this tumor does not metastasize. Except from metastatic tumors like neuroblastoma or tumor of Wilms, this is the only intraocular tumor that can histologically mimic retinoblastoma because they can have these structures that really resemble the rosettes. As I said, the treatment normally is the local excision of the lesion or enucleation, we did in our case. The second case is more recently, is from the last past year, 2009. It was a 26-year-old female that complained of blurred vision and floaters in her left eye in the last 6 months. Her visual acuity was pretty good in both eyes. In the eye of the complaint was 20/40, and the microscopy was unremarkable in both eyes. The IOP and the fundoscopy of the right eye was normal, and in the left eye, we're going to see the pictures. We saw in this retinography swelling of the optic nerve and the vascular dilated vessels, but in the periphery, we found this non-whitey, no-pigmented mass with hemorrhaging that measures about 8 by 6 by 7 millimeters. And here we can see in the angiography, like the leaking of the optic nerve and this block of fluorescence that do the hemorrhages in the tumor. Differential diagnosis for this young woman was between an intraocular neoplasia or an inflammatory granulomas lesion. Among the intraocular neoplasias, we could consider a melanotic melanoma, a metastatic carcinoma, or a retinocytoma, retinoblastoma, or even a lymphoma. And among the inflammatory lesions, tuberculosis, toxocariasis, and sarcoidosis were our hypothesis. The ultrasound showed us this mass that showed a heterogenic echo, somebody can help me. Echocity. And we see that the tumor has no calcification. We see the CT scan and even the ultrasound could not show calcification for this tumor. Some diagnostic tests were taken. They were all negative. The PPD, the chest X-ray, the blood tests for trying to characterize sarcoidosis and toxocariasis serology was also negative. The systemic workout was negative, and even a school CT was taken, and it was normal. Then we talked to that young woman, and she still had such a good vision, and she was a little bit afraid of taking even a biopsy. But when we told her that could be a neoplasia, she agreed to have a biopsy, and the result of this biopsy was this. We saw this proliferation of cells. Some of them are very anaplastic with signs of malignance, and we decided to do immunohistochemistry profile that showed every antibody was negative, the cytokeratin was negative, and the HNB45, and the neuron specific enolase, it was the one positive one. That led us to make the diagnosis of a retinoblastoma in adult. Then, even she was reluctant in have a nucleation, she agreed in have the surgery. And here we have the photo of the gross specimen. And when we go to histology, we see that this tumor really comes from the retina. Here is very clear. Here we even can say that resembles an area of retinocytoma maybe. And if you go to the middle of the tumor, I think it's no doubt that it's a retinoblastoma because we see the rosette very clear here and here and here. In the literature, we have already 25 described cases of retinoblastoma in adults, and the last two ones were reported from here, from Dr. Brunier's lab, one in 2005 and one in the last year by Dr. Maria Eugenia Oriana and co-authors. Retinoblastoma is normally diagnosed before 5 years of age, and we believe that probably most of them does not go de novo, but can be a malignant transformation of a retinocytoma that is a benign counterpart of the retinoblastoma. Calcification, it appears it's not an important find in retinoblastoma in adults. In our case, we couldn't find any calcification. And actually, the find of the typical rosettes will be established the definitive diagnosis. I brought this those cases because I think it's important. Important that always we think in the probably diagnosis. But sometimes this, like these two cases, it can surprise you very much. Thank you.
Any comment or questions to the cases?
Just to make a comment about the second case, Christina, of retinoblastoma. In fact, where is Alex? Is Alex here? Alex is here. And where's Maria Eugenia? Here. The authors of these two cases are here. In Alex's case, what was great was the fact that we could see the transition between retinocytoma and retinoblastoma, and was not a difficult diagnosis. In Maria Eugenia's case, was much more complicated because it was a patient that came with uveitis, with clinical signs and symptoms of a diffuse posterior involvement of what the retinal people thought were a retinitis uveitis type of case. And there was no really mass that we could see. It was kind of a diffuse lesion. And we did a diagnosis by vitrectomy. And we learned that NSE is important, but NSE is very non-specific. What the important immunohistochemical profile is everything else being negative. That's one thing. Second thing is synaptophysin, right? Synaptophysin, and we should test synaptophysin in retinoblastoma because for us it's an excellent marker combined with NSE. NSE has very little value by itself, but if you combine the fact that it's the only thing that's positive with synaptophysin and everything else is negative, all the differential diagnosis, this is enables us to make the diagnosis. The patient was 27 years old. The eye was enucleated and was a retinoblastoma. The reason we published the second case because it was the first time that that diagnosis was made by vitrectomy.
Okay. Actually, I didn't, I resume a little bit, but that case, the first biopsy, it was an aspiration biopsy, showed a very, very little quantity of cells. We were not be able even to do immuno for this. But it was three or four cells that look like a retinoblastoma. Then I told the oncologist, I'm not writing down this, but I think it's a retinoblastoma. And he took a biopsy with a vitrectomy incision. And then he got this really good specimen for that allowed to do the immuno. And that's I think it is very interesting. And I didn't show you the slides of this case, I think. But do you think that area I showed you that is the transition from the normal retina to the tumor can be a retinocytoma? Yes, because the cells look like smaller and more benign than the rest of...
In Alex's case, we had a transition that was very clear, right? We had a retinocytoma type of tumor, and then we could see... We had normal retina, retinocytoma, and then retinoblastoma coming from the retinocytoma area. And what is great is, in the 24 cases, I think only one had calcification.
I think two. In the Alex, two is reported to be.
When you see retinocytoma areas, they do have calcification. When they don't have retinocytoma areas anymore, you don't see calcification anymore.
Okay. Another question? Thank you very much.
Thank you.